I'm sorry I can't stay to chat, but I want to try and find you someplace to sleep tonight.
Oh, Vicky. Victoria, I mean, let me stay here just for a few days anyway. I promise I won't bother you any.
I shook my head implacably. No way, Elena. Her face puckered.
Why do you hate me, baby? Family has to stick by family.
I don't hate you. You and I lead incompatible lives. You know as well as I that Tony would say the same thing if he were still around. I squeezed her shoulder gently and offered to make her some eggs. She shook her head without speaking. I left before pity could overcome my judgment. Elena's SRO had stood a few doors north of the Cermak and Indiana intersection. A niggling doubt I'd had about her story vanished when I pulled up across the street from it. The Indiana Arms Hotel, transients welcome, rates by the day or by the month, had joined the other derelicts on the street in retirement. I parked and went over to look at the skeleton. When I walked around to the north side of the building, I discovered a man in a sports jacket and hard hat poking around in the rubble. He spotted me. "You lose something here?" His tone was pleasant, but his brown eyes were wary. "Just sleep. Someone I know lived here until last night. I wanted to see it for myself. What are you doing here? A suspicious person might think you were making off with valuables." He laughed, and some of the wariness left his face. "They'd be right. In a way, I am. Ajax Insurance." "My name's V.I. Warshawski. I'm a private investigator when I'm not looking for emergency housing, and I do projects for Ajax Insurance from time to time." I pulled a card from my bag and handed it to him. He wiped a sooty hand on a Kleenex and shook mine. "Robin Bessinger. I'm with Ajax's arson and fraud division. I'm surprised I haven't heard your name." It didn't surprise me. Ajax employed 60,000 people around the world. No one could possibly keep track of all of them. I explained that my work for them had been in claims or reinsurance and gave him a few names he'd be likely to recognize. He thawed further and confided that the signs of arson were quite clear. I'd forgotten to ask Elena if anyone had been badly hurt. "No one was killed, but a good half dozen were ferried to Michael Reese with burns and respiratory problems. Torchers usually like to make sure a building can be cleared. They know an investigation into an old dump like this won't get too much attention if there aren't any murder charges to excite the cops." He looked at his wrist. "I'd better get back to work. Hope your friend finds a new place okay." I agreed fervently and went off to start my hunt with an easy optimism bred of ignorance. The kinds of places Elena could afford didn't seem to advertise in the papers. The only residential hotels listed in the classifieds were in Lincoln Park and started at $100 a week. Elena had paid $75 a month for her little room at the Indiana Arms. I spent 4 hours futilely pounding the pavements. I vaguely remembered reading about all the SROs that came down when presidential towers went up, but somehow the impact this had on the street hadn't hit me before. There just wasn't housing available for people with Elena's limited means. The hotels I did find were all full, and victims of last night's fire, savvier than me, had been there at dawn, renting the few rooms available. At 3, I called off the search. I was panicked at the prospect of housing Elena for some indefinite future, but I drove into the loop to my office. I had to do some work. My office in the Pulteney building was definitely down market. Most of the loop expansion in recent years had been to the west. The Pulteney is at the southeast fringe where peep shows and pawn shops push the rents down. The Wabash L rattles the fourth-floor windows, disturbing the pigeons that normally roost there. My furnishings are Spartan gleanings from police auctions and resale shops. I shuffled through papers impatiently until I finally found what I needed. It was a little after 6 when I finished typing letters and reports on my mother's old Olivetti. Having got that far, I went through 2 weeks of mail sitting on the desk. Near the bottom of the stack, I found a thick white letter the size of a wedding invitation with Cook County Women for Open Government in engraved script on the top left. I was about to pitch it when I suddenly realized what it was. In a fit of insanity, I had agreed to be a sponsor for a political fundraiser. Marissa Duncan and I had worked together in the public defender's office an eon or two ago. She was one of those people who live and die for politics, whether in the office or on the street, and she chose her issues carefully. She'd been active in our drive to unionize the PD's office, for example, but she'd steered clear of involvement in the politics of abortion. She didn't want anything to drag her down if she decided to run for office. Now Marissa had a cushy job with a big public relations firm that specialized in selling candidates. She only phones me when she's masterminding some great campaign. When she called 4 weeks ago, I'd just finished a tricky job for a ball-bearing manufacturer in Kankakee. She'd caught me basking in the glow that comes from a display of competence combined with a large check.
"Great news," she said enthusiastically.